Welcome to the program for Friday, April 6, 2012 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Every Friday in the 3 o'clock hour, we bring you the Federal News Countdown. Two people who are experts in the world of the federal government choose the news stories they think are the three most important from this week to people who work for the federal government. We count them down on the Federal News Countdown. This week, my guests are, first of all, a veteran of the Federal News Countdown. It's Molly O'Neill. She's a fellow at the CGI Initiative for Collaborative Government and former CIO at the Environmental Protection Agency. Always great to have you on the program, Molly.
Well, thank you for having me.
I'm happy you could find some time in your busy travel schedule to be here. They have you going all over the place, don't they?
It comes and goes, just like with every job.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad you're here. You've chosen three great stories, and I don't mean to give it away, but I think you have one in here about the General Services Administration.
Well, I think that's hard to avoid this week.
It really is. My colleague on the Federal News Countdown this week is Ruben Gomez, a reporter and producer at Federal News Radio. It's good to have you on. First time here.
First time here. Great to be here. I feel it's quite an honor, Francis.
And a lot of folks don't know, Molly, I don't know if you even know this, Ruben's nickname is Magic. Because when he's given an assignment at Federal News Radio, it just appears done well, like magic. And so that's why he's been given that
nickname. I did hear the word magic, and I didn't know if it was
that's
me.
That's what it meant.
I thought maybe it was me.
Well, no disrespect intended, okay. But we were talking about Ruben. And we start this week on the Federal News Countdown with, of course,
number three.
The third most important federal news story, as selected by my colleague Ruben Gomez, is from federalnewsradio.com. It's Jolie Lee's story, headlined, Video Gaming Inspires New Tools at the State Department. Now, I was a little surprised to learn about this from State. My understanding it is that in the modeling and simulation community, they've been using video game tools for a long time, especially in the military, just because a lot of recruits that are coming into the military are 18, 19, 20 years old, and they've grown up in a video game culture. What's the State Department doing here that caught your eye?
The State Department, well, I don't know, a lot of listeners are probably familiar with the Kinect. It's hard to escape the advertisements these days. It's a, it's basically a video camera that hooks up to your Xbox 360 and recognizes your hand gestures and your voice. Mm-hmm. You can basically talk to it. I have this at home and watch Netflix without touching anything. I just kind of say, I want to watch this movie, and it works. So the State Department has adapted this to a Windows 7 PC platform. And we were – I was at FOSSI the other day. They have set it up with presentation software. And so all you have to do is really wave your hand, pinch with your hand if you want to zoom in, and wave either left or right to go backwards or forwards in the slideshow. It's really quite interesting.
Wow.
They say this is actually only the beginning. This is kind of a rudimentary development. You know, they say there's a lot more potential for this. And it turns out they have a really smart intern who did this.
Really?
Yeah.
An intern did this.
I think there's
won't be an intern for very long.
This guy's going to be making money soon.
Francis, I almost picked this same story. I was afraid to pick anything with the word gaming in the government right now. So I will say that. But I think the real part of the story, I think if you read into it, and while the State Department is doing some interesting things, I think you see it in defense as well, especially. But I think the real push here is to say, now's the time to look and leverage technology, even if it's not normally in the government jurisdiction normally, or what we normally see in government, and even in the private sector, and say there's new technology out there that we can be applying in different ways to save a lot of money. Because what they're saying is maybe we don't have to buy these huge multi, you know, $6,000, $10,000 presentation boards.
Right.
We can just jump a machine in, put a flat screen in or something, and it's much more costly.
$150.
Right, exactly. So
$150.
That's really the story here, to say, you know, we got to think differently, right?
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. And, you know, there's a whole bunch of applications for something like this, and they're really just looking at all the possibilities. And, you know, Francis, you mentioned the military has been using video gaming to get people interested. NASA's been doing it to get people interested in science careers, for example. But there are a lot of agencies like State who are trying things out, things that are already out there, the Wii, the Xbox Kinect, that can be adapted for a lot of different things, and I think this is one example.
My only fear in reading a story like this, Ruben, I agree with everything that you say here, and I can see as an Xbox 360 owner myself, I don't play it, my son does, but I see the technology. I understand what it does. My only fear is that on the heels of what we've been hearing all this week, somebody especially somebody on Capitol Hill, is going to say, oh, so this is the latest trick. The State Department's playing video games, not understanding necessarily that's, what the technology might imply.
Yeah, so it's going to be a real, I think, marketing push if you want to keep something like this alive. And it's, you've got to show that, no, this is really not just about playing video games. This is really about finding new, innovative ways to save money.
Do you have Dance Dance Revolution? Because I'm trying to picture you doing that on your Xbox 360.
I tried it once on a friend's. You don't want to see it.
I wish I had video of that. Ruben's number three most important federal news story of the week is from federalnewsradio.com. It's our colleague Jolie Lee's story. Headline, Video Gaming Inspires New Tools at State. Molly O'Neill, your third most important federal news story is from GovExec. The headline is, Telework Isn't Working, Some Say. This is the first time that I've seen, I guess, in a media outlet, this sentiment expressed. But this has, I think, been bubbling under for a long time, and maybe because of the emphasis that the administration's put on telework, people have been afraid to say it outright or something. But this sentiment has been around for a while. Isn't it fair to say that?
Well, I think people are disappointed in terms of where it is after all these years. But I also think it's an important story because it's not just this story that came out. There was also one that came out earlier the week with NextGov, and I think it was called something like Flexible Work Options, Not Just for the Young.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and it was kind of interesting that all these are sort of bubbling up. But I think why it's an important story is that, and some of this is in here, it really needs to be rebranded because we started with telework, right? And it was really about saving money so people don't have to bring their cars, right? They can work from home. But the reality is, and we talked a little bit about it with the first story, technology is actually allowing us to do things a lot differently, a lot differently. Mm-hmm. So we can store our data in the cloud and be able to get it. We can, you know, we have different models for security, for cybersecurity. We have a knowledge that, you know, federal buildings are like, what, half the cost for the federal government, you know, after people.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really a rebranding to say, instead of just looking at telework to have people work at home, how do we really brand this as more productive work environments for government where you have an integrated strategy,
mm-hmm.
right, around how you have buildings, how you manage people, how you provision them, whether it's through mobility or, just through cell phones or iPads or laptops, whatever they
yeah.
need to do their jobs, and then how do you put all this together? So to me, it's starting to spark a conversation about turning this into something in today's language and in today's capabilities, really what we can do with what started with telework.
Is this kind of an evolutionary development? Then is it fair to say, is this a way that we're going to be thinking about it and approaching it differently, or is this really just a branding exercise?
I think we need to approach it differently, I don't think we could have.
But maybe there's a difference between what we need to do
right.
and what's actually happening. That's what I'm getting at.
Right, and I think it's probably because, you know, where we've seen small successes in certain agencies where they're actually, you know, doing a lot of telework and it's working well, and others, and there's, you know, cultural barriers here clearly, and that's, you know, in all the stories that you read. But mm-hmm. the reality is we're at a juncture right now that we can rethink this and rebrand it so that we're really making sort of the next generation government workplace and workforce much more productive
mm-hmm.
and sort of bring all these initiatives together instead of doing them siloed and then wondering why we're not getting as much out of them as we can.
Molly O'Neill's third most important federal news story of the week is from GovExec. The headline is, Telework Isn't Working, Some Say. It's linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, just like all of our stories on the Federal News Countdown this week. My colleague Ruben Gomez and Molly O'Neill from CGI Federal on the countdown this week, and we'll get to the second most important federal news story of the week as chosen by each when In-Depth with Francis Rose continues in a moment.
Horace Blackman, Director of IT Services of Department of Veterans Affairs, on a recent Unified Communications panel discussion sponsored by General Dynamics IT.
There are a number of things we're looking to do to leverage the UC environment. Some of it includes things such as delivery of clinical care. We are certainly extent to which we want to enhance the degree to which we can foster collaboration is certainly there. And as everywhere else in the federal government these days, you always have to keep the perspective of trying to find cost savings wherever you can.
Connecting people people to people anywhere, anytime, on any device. Not just an idea, but a demand of today's governments, businesses, and consumers. General Dynamics IT integrates voice, video, and data services to provide increased mission effectiveness. Secure communications is a basic tenet in healthcare, law enforcement, finance, and defense, and will continue to drive the future of our unified communications. Visit GDIT.com for more information. That's GDIT.com.
Profile America, Friday, April 6th. The Civil War Battle of Shiloh, sometimes called Pittsburgh Landing, began on this date 150 years ago. The bloodiest battle of the war to that point, it cost both sides combined an estimated 23,000 casualties. That huge number was a shock to North and South alike. Some histories say the casualties of this single battle exceeded the total of those suffered in America's three previous wars. The cost in lives also ended any thoughts that the war would be won easily and end shortly. Some 3 million men served on both sides. Battle deaths and disease claimed at least 364,000 on the Union side alone. Confederate losses are unknown. You can find more facts about America from the U.S. Census Bureau online at census.gov.
Staying focused on your mission requires making smart decisions and mitigating unnecessary risks. That's why many agencies turn to GSA. With unparalleled experience in acquisition and financial compliance and technical expertise, GSA makes it easy for federal civilian and military customers to maintain mission focus and enhance program performance by adding value. With trained professionals in contracting, financial, and program management, GSA stands ready to help execute large-scale and or complex and or sensitive IT and professional services projects while maintaining seamless compliance with today's tough mandates. With GSA, you gain a trusted partner to ensure delivery promises are kept on time, on budget, and at best value. To learn how GSA can help, call 703-605-3699. That's 703-605-3699. Or visit gsa.gov/AAS. That's gsa.gov/AAS. GSA, providing custom solutions to your complex requirements.
Tom Temin here with a preview of Monday's Federal Drive. Leaders at the Commerce Department want to improve security around the perimeter of their headquarters building. GSA develops a plan. Find out what happens next. Plus, the nation's airports cover a lot of ground. Agriculture and the FAA are working together to turn that acreage into sources of renewable energy. There's cash in grass. Those stories and more Monday morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown this week includes the three most important federal news stories of the week as chosen by Molly O'Neill of CGI Federal and my colleague from Federal News Radio, Ruben Gomez. And we are up to...
Number two!
The second most important federal news story of the week is chosen by Molly O'Neill is Jared Serbu's story on federalnewsradio.com, headlined, Cutting and Investing Aren't Mutually Exclusive, Federal CIO Says. That's Stephen Van Roekel's speech at FOSSE this week, talking about the fact that agencies should be looking at ways to invest and cut money at the same time. Maybe he thinks they're not mutually exclusive, Molly, but I think there are a lot of people that are skeptical across government. Is that fair to say?
I think some people are skeptical, but I think he's right. So my own personal opinion is he's right. And I actually... these sort of what I'll say these budget challenging times are where you can actually force change and actually encourage innovation because you're looking for different ways of doing things, whether to save money or just to do things differently because there's, you know, a lot of pressures to, you know, to deliver services faster, better, cheaper, make sure there's no redundancy in government. So there's absolutely an opportunity to both cut, find ways to do things cheaper, but also to do it, to do innovation because innovation is not necessarily expensive. I think we just sort of talked about
right.
that,
yeah.
you know, in the last segment. So it's interesting how these sort of things work together here.
This fits with the story that you chose as your third most important story, Ruben, about the Xbox technology, the Kinect technology that Microsoft has.
as you examine the landscape across the federal government, report on this stuff for us, do you see at least potential for lots of opportunities like this, like Steve Van Roekel's talking about in this story?
Well, yeah, I think the potential is definitely out there. I think it depends on who you ask, though, and who is leading that potential change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think there the common roadblock that we seem to be hitting here with on all of these stories we've talked about so far is the culture change. It's, well, this is the way we've always done it. And it seems like the federal CIO and other people like the State Department are asking people to think a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you can get beyond that, then I think you kind of open up the storehouse for this change.
What are the roadblocks that you see to that, though, Molly? Is it only cultural? Is it only mental?
No. And I think one of the other issues is that we tend to put out guidance, and so we just add layers to things,
mm-hmm.
and it complicates things. And so, I mean, even in this article, Steve Van Roekel talks about, you know, 1,700 federal websites, right?
Mm-hmm.
Lots of information, yet no one can find anything. So let's flip it around, right? And that part of that is because as we have a new program, we layer, you know, another website on it, or
mm-hmm.
an associated program that's affiliated with government, we lay another, you know, front page on something. And so we're just sort of adding to what I will say is the flood of information, yet we can't find things. And so I think because sort of how government works, okay, traditionally, new program, new layer, new program, new layer, new program, new layer, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a huge barrier in a lot of different ways. And so, you know, I kind of liked his point to say, why don't we flip it around and say, now there's a barrier there, but let's flip around before we implement something. Let's look at, like on the website thing, let's look at how the customer looks at things. Let's not organize it by our program. Maybe it doesn't make sense to put a new website up. Maybe it makes a sense to put it where the consumer is already looking for something. So I think, you know, those are great concepts out there.
You use a word there that I'm hearing. I've heard more in the last, say, 2 years regarding the federal government and the way that they give citizens what they want than I heard the whole rest of the time that I've covered government before that, and that's the word customer. What's driving that change in people's mentalities and their viewpoint, do you think, that they're starting, I think, it's great that they're doing it, to think of that methodology that we're serving customers?
Well, I think when you get so much information, part of that is being part of the sort of the digital age too,
mm-hmm.
right? It's sort of an old word, digital, right? But or an electronic age. The reality is more and more information. It used to be you would come and you would call in and you didn't know how you were routed, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, or you would go up to a building for help and you wouldn't know really where you were routed. Now, with everything going online, it seems it's like you're being routed in different ways. And I think that's part of why things have happened the way that they've happened, quite frankly. I know Magic's trying to jump in.
No, I'm just sitting here, you know, and I understand that this is exactly what I'm hearing from the people we cover every day, day in, day out. You know, I go back to your point about layer upon layer upon layer, you know, whereas I wonder how much of this is just the mentality of the way it's always been done. So I think we have to, you know, we have these layers versus what are the statutory or regulatory roadblocks that are actually there that would need to be changed.
And because of these layers, and I think that's why it almost, you know, cries out to look at the customer. And so if you actually go back to this, I can remember when I was in the federal government as a CIO, one of the first things I did was I went out and I talked to our customers who use our websites. And I said, do a little exercise with me. If you've got chemicals in your backyard, where do you go?
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, I have no idea, because they're in, and I was trying to talk about a specific program, and I explained what that program is, and this particular guy that I was talking to had absolutely no idea where to go on the website, because
mm-hmm.
it was organized by how we were organized,
mm-hmm.
not how someone who's actually using the information. I mean, most people today, right, are not that experienced in how the federal regulations run.
Yeah, most folks
like that
haven't done that
a lot.
We
have to think outside the beltway.
But that goes back to what we were talking about before in the first segment, because we're thinking like the person who's using the stuff and being willing to use private sector experience, and that's not always been easy for the government. But, I mean, you go on Amazon, both of you, I'm sure, and you're served up continually. You liked this, so you will probably like that.
Right.
Same thing happens to me on
eBay.
And that's
good and bad.
Well, and that is. But it suits their purposes, and it suits your purposes, too, because you are introduced introduced to things. Van Roekel talks about that in this speech. Right. He says if you have a favorite artist and you throw up a Pandora station, you wind up finding incredible new music that you didn't know existed. Same idea. Right. You like this artist, we're going to give you something by this because the crowd has indicated that most folks who
like this
also like that. Right. So it's the same deal. What's the holdup mechanically to getting those that done? Is it because there isn't one central repository for stuff, or is it the mentality of we're not thinking like the user yet, or what do you think?
I think it's all those things, and it's the way that we're organized. So within the government, so we don't have a, you know, I'm a builder, mm-hmm. you know, and so what am I interested in? Or, you know, I'm a teacher, and what am I interested in? Or I'm a, you know. We're not set up that way. We're not organized that way. We're certainly not organized that way online, and we're not organized that way within the government stovepipes.
So is it possible and is it practical to think that understanding that the government's not organized that way physically, is it possible to organize that way online so that agencies can work collaboratively to present information?
Yeah, that's a place you can. Start to organize that way. That's a solution to the problem, actually. And I think that's some of the things that Van Roekel's trying to get at here without exactly saying it in the article there or at FOSSI.
I didn't even have a chance to dig into the portfolio stat element of this, which is kind of a build on tech stat. And you can read about that at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, the second most important federal news story of the week, as selected by Molly O'Neill of CGI Federal, is headlined, Cutting and Investing Aren't Mutually Exclusive, Federal CIO Says. It's Jared Serbu's coverage of Stephen Van Roekel's speech from this week on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Ruben Gomez's second most important federal news story of the week is up next on the Federal News Countdown on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The Department of Defense update is brought to you by ITT Excellus.
The Defense Department's looking for help to catch cyber attacks. National Security Agency Director General Keith Alexander told the Senate Armed Services Committee he wants Congress to pass legislation to require private companies to report cyber attacks. He said they don't currently find out about attacks until after they've occurred. The Defense Department's requested $3.4 billion for Cyber Command in fiscal 2013.
What is the power of Ingenuity? It's helping save lives and property with accurate weather tracking and prediction. It's generating geospatial images for military and commercial customers. It's getting information in the hands of people who need it around the world as fast as possible. And it all comes from ITT Excellus, the nation's trusted remote sensing leader for half a century. Visit exelisinc.com. That's exelisinc.com. Excellus, the power of Ingenuity.
What does it take to go from good government to great? When one agency decided to modernize an old financial system, several departments struggled to transition effectively. But one office resolved $718 million worth of systematic financial errors to quickly become an agency-wide model for new system adoption.
Visit myacuity.com/realresults to learn more. Acuity, your vision, our focus.
Welcome to today's lottery draw. And today's winning numbers are not yours, not yours, and another number that's not yours. And the final number is not yours.
When it comes to having money, don't rely on luck. Brew your own coffee at home instead of buying that latte. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering in. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Looking for a professional master's degree that will take your career to the next level? The University of Maryland's Master's in Applied Economics can help you gain a valuable professional advantage and expand your career opportunities. Meet faculty and get all your questions answered at the next information session, April 18th at 6:30 p.m. in the Ronald Reagan Building at the Federal Triangle Metro Stop. More details and directions at masters.econ.umd.edu.
Exercising this week from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfus with HHS HealthBeat. Feel like exercising this week? How about every week? Researchers have been tracking week-by-week changes in people's motivation to exercise, and they say those don't-feel-like-it weeks can really hurt the capacity to stick with the program. At Penn State, David Conroy measured weekly intentions and physical activity performance of 33 college students over 10 weeks. He says people with the strongest weekly commitments were more likely to be successful, but he warns
most people set goals without considering their commitment and how those commitments will change from a week-to-week basis.
So good time management to work on consistency can help. The study in the Journal of Sport and Exercise Psychology was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Federal News Radio United Way Community Spotlight for April is Montgomery Hospice. For more than 30 years, Montgomery Hospice has provided expert end-of-life medical care for residents of Montgomery County who are living with an advanced illness. Patients receive care in their own homes from compassionate professionals who provide dignity and peace. The patients' families receive support as well. For more information, visit federalnewsradio.com. The Federal News Radio charities are fed by Papa John's.
Back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, the Federal News Countdown every week. Includes the three most important federal news stories of the week as chosen by two people who are experts in the world of the federal government. This week, my experts are Molly O'Neill from CGI Federal and my colleague from Federal News Radio, Ruben Gomez. And Ruben, your second most important federal news story of the week is headlined, Board Seeks Marines Dismissal in Facebook Case. This is from federalnewsradio.com. And you know how we have tags at the bottom of each story so that if you want to search on a particular category of stories, you can do that. And our web team does a terrific job. But I think they fell down on the job on this one a little bit because they did not tag this story, stupid people who do stupid stuff. I cannot believe this guy. It's unbelievable.
This is a really interesting story. And so what this guy did is he's got a website or a Facebook page called the Armed Forces Tea Party. And, you know, he's not ambiguous about the fact that he doesn't like President Obama's policies. And so he's posting things on this Facebook page like One Nation Under Obama with poverty and unemployment for all. And something that his lawyers are bringing up, this guy has been recommended for dismissal now without honor.
You think?
Something his lawyers are bringing up, well, this is a free speech thing. And so the military is very clear, you know, when you're joining, there are certain things you don't get to say, and criticizing the commander-in-chief is one of them. And you know that signing up. Just like when I took a job here, you know, or anywhere, if I criticize my boss, I got to be willing to suffer the consequences or, you know, disparage anybody for that matter. And I think this is kind of the battle that's going on here.
Molly, how long do you think you'd last if you criticized Mike Roach?
Not very long.
Yeah. And you shouldn't.
Right.
That's just stupid. I
agree. And there really, this really isn't, social media is the avenue and the media way he decided to do it. Right?
Right.
If social media weren't there, would he have still done it? The question is, because to me, whether you do it on a social media page or whether you do it in front of someone or, you know, or to your next in command, it's still being done, right?
Correct.
This guy's been in the Marines, the story says, for 9 years. It would have been no different if the first year he was in the Marines, he went on base and was handing out handbills that said all of this stuff. It just is amazing to me. This story says the military's had a policy since the Civil War limiting the free speech of service members, including criticism of the commander-in-chief. So it's not like he didn't know. I just can't believe he didn't know.
Right. I don't know what the answer is to this.
I'm flummoxed. And yet his attorney, listen to his attorney, we're truly surprised and disappointed in the decision for the military board to recommend dismissal. But it was an honor to fight for a hero like Sergeant Stein and every other Marine's right to speak freely. Now, I understand the First Amendment, and I've read the First Amendment. And I understand that I have the rights that are outlined in the First Amendment. I also have the right to give up those rights to obtain other things. And that's what you do when you go into the military. That's what you do when you swear the oath. You give up some of those rights in order to have the privilege of serving your country, and this dude doesn't seem to understand that.
Well, and there's risks with all your rights, right?
Yes.
So, like you said, whether you're working for the military or not, if you and I or Magic... The three of us spoke about our bosses that way. I mean, we take a risk.
Yeah, right? You're free to say whatever you want.
You're free, right.
But there are also consequences to what you say and do. And I think this is what this gentleman's up against.
And I want to be clear. In my view, the stupidity here is not that he's exercising his First Amendment right. Because, as I said, I understand it, mm-hmm. and I'm into that idea. But to be surprised and to be upset when the military says, we don't think this is a good idea and we want you to get out potentially... And then to fight as hard as he's fighting to stay in an institution that he thinks is being run so poorly, because after all, the president's his boss. The president's the commander-in-chief. So ultimately up the chain, he reports to the president that he's criticizing on all of these social media outlets. Why would you want to stay in an organization like that?
Yeah, and the other thing that I think this article, I mean, I think we're all in agreement in terms of, you know, for the military, this is what you sign up for, and those things have been in the books a long time. But, you know, the social media itself, and I think, Francis, you and I have had this discussion. It does open up if you're not in the military, right, and you don't maybe sign up for those things, like the military requires. You know, what you put on your website or what you put on your Facebook page about your agency or your positions or positions that you don't agree with, mm-hmm. they're going, you know, are raising sort of the issue out there. And so, you know, the debate will continue to say, how far can you go? And again, there's consequences for what you do.
Yeah.
And this isn't really new anywhere.
No.
Not is it new for the military, and it's also not new for the private sector. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, when you're part of a company, you're expected to separate your private life from your official life. And so if I have views that I want to post or talk about, I'm not going to talk about them in my capacity as a reporter, for example, for Federal News Radio, you know, and this is something that happens anywhere, government or private sector employment. So I'm a little flummoxed and confused that some people think this is a surprise.
You know, one thing that Ruben definitely keeps separate from his Federal News Radio information is his website where he works freelance as a Marlboro Man impersonator.
Oh, I see that. I can definitely see that, yes.
He's very judicious about keeping those two things separate so that they don't overlap at all.
I can definitely see that.
And by the way, a word to all of my supervisors at Federal News Radio. There is nothing inflammatory about any of them on any of my social media sites. I've made sure to keep myself very clear
on
that.
Can I second that?
Of course. You're welcome to associate yourself with my remarks. Ruben Gomez's second most important federal news story of the week is headlined, Board Seeks Marines Dismissal in Facebook Case. It's linked up now, like all of our stories in the countdown this week, at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And another visit to the Department of Stupidity when we check out our most important federal news story of the week next on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Are you a federal or U.S. Postal Service employee or annuitant or an active or retired member of the uniformed services? If so, you're eligible to apply for coverage under the Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program. The program offers a smart way to help protect savings and assets and remain independent should you need long-term care services someday. Make long-term care insurance part of your retirement plan. Find out how at ltcfeds.com. That's ltcfeds.com.
In the beloved fairy tale Beauty and the Beast, Belle and the Beast learn that true beauty is found within and live happily ever after. Today, our happily ever afters are being threatened by the fact that nearly 1 in 3 children in America are overweight or obese. Now is the time to make good nutrition and physical activity part of your family's daily lifestyle. To learn more, visit letsmove.gov, brought to you by Let's Move, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the Ad Council.
Federal pay and benefits are taking center stage in the 2013 budget debate. President Obama has proposed a 0.5% pay increase for feds, while Republicans are calling for a federal pay freeze through 2015. Republicans also support a 10% cut to the size of the federal workforce, while both plans promote an increase in feds' contributions to their retirement accounts. FederalNewsRadio.com is your home for all of the latest budget news. Visit FederalNewsRadio.com, search term budget.
Newsmakers on In Depth with Francis Rose.
Anna Galindo Moroni is chief of the Hatch Act unit at the Office of Special Counsel.
Federal employees cannot engage in political activity directed at the success or failure of a candidate or campaign, and that would include using not only their government email account or their government computers, but also their own personal gadgets, whether it's their smartphone, their iPad, or any other similar item.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.
You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guests on the Federal News Countdown this week are my colleague from Federal News Radio, Ruben Gomez, and Molly O'Neill from CGI Federal. And I want to clarify something that I said just a moment ago. And Molly O'Neill very graciously pointed it out, and you're exactly right. I said that in our most important federal news story of the week this week, we were going to look at the... I said, speaking of the Department of Stupidity, our most important federal news story is next. And I want to be very clear. The agency about which our most important story is chosen by both of you, incidentally. I know a lot of people that work at the General Services Administration. I probably know more people at that agency than any other agency in the federal government. To a person, every person that I know on an individual basis at that agency is a tremendous servant to the taxpayers of this country. So I want to be clear that when I talk about the Department of Stupidity, I am in no way painting the entire agency with that brush. However, we have learned this week in detail after detail after detail that I'm not going to regurgitate here because they're all posted online at federalnewsradio.com if you're just coming to this story. We have learned this week that there is a certain very, 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 very small group of people within that agency who chose, I can only deduce that they chose based on these actions, to do things to ruin the reputation of all of the people that I know and the other people that work in that agency all over the country that do a tremendous job for the taxpayers of this country. The most important federal news story of the week, as chosen by both Ruben and Molly O'Neill, is the situation at the General Services Administration that drove the resignation of Martha Johnson not long after she fired the head of the Public Buildings Service, Bob Peck, and her own senior counselor, Stephen Leeds. This just feeds every single stereotype that every single member of Congress that's predisposed already to dislike the federal government, and every single citizen that's predisposed to like the federal government, it feeds all of their stereotypes, and it makes the job of everybody who remains in government extremely difficult. Molly, as this story broke, as the details of this came out, what'd you think? How did you react?
Well, I think my first reaction was really for Administrator Johnson, just because I had spent some time with her, mm-hmm. and I know that she's a real change agent and was on the path of really doing some really innovative things and having GSA really take the lead on a couple of things, mm-hmm. Whether it's cloud computing or around energy efficiency, trying to do something innovative around telework. All of those kinds of things. So my gut, you know, having been a political appointee myself, mm-hmm. was I feel bad for her that a few people, as you said, a few people with really poor judgment, you know, have tarnished this. But then I thought, you know what, if I were in the same position, I would have done the same thing that she did, mm-hmm. It really isn't a bold move. It was the right move to make. And so, you know, as this was unfolding, my first thought is very personal to me to think of how would I have handled this.
Yeah.
And so sort of went through that. And then, you know, mostly I think it was disappointment. And also, you know, from what you're saying, too, there's a small amount of people who use really poor judgment here. But that's not what the GSA is about. And like I say, it's going to get worse. That's all I kept thinking of. It's going to, as you said, feed the fodder, as we were talking about during the break, for mm-hmm. people who want to point fingers at government. Overspending, lack of accountability in spending and things like that. It's going to fuel the fire there. And, you know, quite frankly, we're at a time where we really need to push forward on some innovation and some transformation in government. And now with a lot of oversight hearings that are going to occur, the folks at GSA are really going to need to button down and actually do work, even mm-hmm. knowing that this fire is out there. And so, you know, it's a story that's going to be around for a while. It's very disappointing to read, and let's not forget, as you said earlier, that there are some really good things coming out of GSA. And so how do you, as an agency, the question is, how do you, you know, deal with what I will say is sort of a morale breaker, whether, mm-hmm. you know, you were involved or not, and most of them weren't, right, and continue to do the work for the people, for the public.
Yeah.
And that is going to be very, very hard to stay focused.
As you covered this story this week, Ruben, as you track these developments, and you were at the forefront of a lot of our coverage on this week, as you watch these developments happen, what was it like to cover this story and to try to connect all of these dots, to put them together in a way that made sense when so much of the pieces, as we learned about them individually, didn't make any sense and caused a lot of us in this newsroom here to look at each other and say, what? Really? Some of the things were just hard to believe coming especially from this particular agency.
Yeah, I mean, you know, looking back, you know, I can see how all the pieces fit together and we're getting a clearer picture. There are still a lot of question marks, I think, for a lot of people, and I think we'll find answers to those question marks as more is revealed. And, you know, some people have said this is a story that keeps on giving in the sense that we keep on learning more every day about the story. And, you know, at first, you know, you look at it and the headline, the sensational headline was clowns and mind readers at this conference and such, you know, and there was a lot that was kind of the example that was put out there as to why the government may have wasted a lot of money on this event. Mm-hmm. You know, another question of mine was what Molly was just talking about. It's, you know, I think this is going to be how GSA handles this and moves forward is going to be a really good example, or bad, depending on what happens, for other agencies, because this is GSA is not the only agency that's had to deal with something like this.
Yeah. You mentioned the clowns and mind readers reference, Ruben, and I want to give a shout out to my one of my producers, Beth Reardon, who pointed out to me Monday evening as we went through the Inspector General's report. We started to see the media reports on this. There's no reference in the Inspector General's report to clowns or mind readers or any of the entertainment at this event. That's not to say that those things didn't happen and weren't part of it. But it's interesting to me that that's where the media went right away, even though it wasn't included anywhere here. And it became one of the – it was almost like an internet thing. I don't know if the word is meme or mem, M-E-M-E. How do you say that? Do you know, either of you? When something is on the internet, it becomes popularized and starts to take on a life of its own. And that's what happened with those terms, I think. Now, there are some media outlets that said that did qualify those, and there were quite a few that didn't, that just made it look to the average person who doesn't look at the General Services Administration every day like this was just a given, this was a fact that it's part of this, when in fact that information was nowhere in this IG report. There was plenty in there to get upset about.
Right.
It goes back to the, you know, what was it, last year there was an IG report about the Justice Department, I believe, $16 muffins or something along those lines.
Yeah.
I don't remember what the exact price was.
And I don't remember the agency either.
The auditors came back and said, oops, our mistake. We miscalculated. They were not $16 muffins. But there's still that perception. A lot of news organizations looking at the national networks this morning are going back to that case. And even though the fact is the muffins did not cost $16. So once it's in the public mind, I think it's there. So, again, figuring out how GSA is going to move forward, I think, is where we're going to see a lot of interesting stuff.
And an exercise in how this stuff gets implanted in the minds of people who don't follow this every day. Wednesday night, I was on the Jim Bohannon show that runs all over the country, and we're one of the stations that runs that show. And one of the questions that he asked me is, this is another example of the $16 muffin or whatever the thing is. Mm-hmm. How is this different? I said, well, Jim, the difference is the next day after that IG report hit, on an afternoon, the very next morning, the agency submitted both to the IG and to the media its evidence, its context of how that worked. Mm-hmm. And the Inspector General later released an amended report that said, well, maybe we didn't have all the information that we needed. And in fact, here's what we now see really happened, and it wasn't bad at all. It was perfectly normal and reasonable. The difference here is when the evidence came out from the Inspector General at this agency, the leader of the agency fired two of her top people and then quit herself.
Right.
That's a little bit of a different crisis management situation, I would say, as far as the evidence goes.
Just a bit. I mean, that, you know, that says she's admitting they had missteps.
That's exactly right.
Whether she was directly responsible or not, that's not the issue for her. I think the issue is, you know, it's an issue of accountability and setting the example for other people.
Well, and it's also, you know, like I say, it's the right thing to do because if that didn't happen, there would be even more stories coming out and more attention and a call for that to happen. And, you know, I think, at least in Martha's case, you know, like I said, she's pretty savvy. Mm-hmm. And I think she was disappointed. I mean, this is my own opinion. And so she did the right thing. She wanted to show, you know, that you have to be accountable. I can only do so much at this point. There's going to be more investigation. But I also have to take this opportunity to start steering the ship right so that if we can say that, you know, it is the senior official, I'm going to step down because the reality is I need at least some people focused on doing the right stuff.
Yeah. And that won't happen as long as I'm still in the chair.
That's exactly right.
The most important federal news story of the week is selected by both Molly O'Neill of CGI Federal and my colleague at Federal News Radio, Ruben Gomez, is the General Services Administration crisis. The story that Ruben chose is from federalnewsradio.com. Our Jack Moore story headline, GSA head Johnson resigns, two other officials fired. And Molly O'Neill chose the CNN version of this story headline, GSA head resigns over wasteful Las Vegas seminar. Both those stories at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And we'll talk about this a bit more when we come back to wrap up this week's Federal News Countdown on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Here's Fred Whiteside of NIST on the Navigating the Private Cloud panel, sponsored by Microsoft and Dell.
NIST defines a private cloud as one that is owned and operated by a particular organization. I think if there is any ambiguity, I think it lies in what constitutes an organization. Mm-hmm. What is an organization? Is that an entire department? Is it a bureau or agency?
To listen to the whole program, made possible by Microsoft and Dell, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Today's federal agencies are being asked to do much more with less. With requirements to consolidate data centers, increase security, approve agility, and demonstrate mission-critical alignment, all while ensuring the cost-effectiveness of a virtualized infrastructure, the task can be daunting. Moving toward the private cloud could be the answer. And the best news is that you may already own products like Microsoft Windows Server, System Center, SQL Server, SharePoint, and Exchange, which can help you get your agency well on its way. To learn more, visit Microsoft.com/transform.gov/IT.
Staying focused on your mission requires making smart decisions and mitigating unnecessary risks. That's why many agencies turn to GSA. With unparalleled experience in acquisition and financial compliance and technical expertise, GSA makes it easy for federal civilian and military customers to maintain mission focus and enhance program performance by adding value. With trained professionals in contracting, financial, and program management, GSA stands ready to help execute large-scale and or complex and or sensitive IT and professional services projects while maintaining seamless compliance with today's tough mandates. With GSA, you gain a trusted partner to ensure delivery promises are kept on time, on budget, and at best value. To learn how GSA can help, call 703-605-3699. That's 703-605-3699. Or visit gsa.gov/AAS. That's gsa.gov/AAS. GSA, providing custom solutions to your complex requirements.
I love my husband, but I didn't realize our difficulties had to do with his drinking. Our pastor suggested I go to Al-Anon family groups. I didn't think I would be comfortable, but I decided to try a meeting. The Al-Anon meeting really opened my eyes. Are you troubled by someone's drinking? You might be surprised at what you can learn in an Al-Anon family group meeting from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-ALANON.
To balance new cuts with new spending in the FY 2013 budget, federal agencies are achieving savings through emerging technologies. Largely led by chief technology officers, agencies are rewriting the rulebook on areas like shared services, commodity IT, cloud computing, and cybersecurity. Join AFSEA Bethesda April 10th at the Bethesda North Marriott as a panel of CTOs from federal agencies discusses federal IT transformation from the bottom up. Register today at AFSEABethesda.org/APRBreakfast.
Listen each week for Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, we zero in on how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 11, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Then Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO. Hear from the top of the food chain on how your agency is using technology today. Tech Tuesday, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
We're back on the Federal News Countdown on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guests on the countdown this week, my colleague Ruben Gomez and Molly O'Neill of CGI Federal, the former Chief Information Officer at the Environmental Protection Agency. And we're talking about the most important federal news story of the week as selected by both of them. It's the scandal at the General Services Administration. We talked about during the break the fact that the first hearing about this has already been scheduled. The House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee on April 19th is calling Martha Johnson to appear. She, according to the committee, has agreed to testify. And we can only imagine that this is going to be an extremely unpleasant experience for her. Molly, you've been in this situation. You're a political appointee called to a hearing hosted by a chairman of the other party in a situation that you're not necessarily directly responsible for. What is that? What is the preparation for an experience like that like? And what is it like to sit in that chair?
Well, I tell you, it's tough. And my own, you know, my own personal, having been part of a couple tough hearings where, you know, you feel uncomfortable. But you do what you do to prepare is you try and get prepared. You try and understand what the questions are going to be. You try your best to answer them. You're honest as you can. And you hope that there'll be some fairness. You know, the problem with some of maybe what's going to occur, though, and you hope they're going to be actual fact-finding, and it's not going to be Martha Johnson versus someone, you know, a stack of other panelists there who don't even have the facts either but mm-hmm. are just going to be gunning for GSA. Because to me, those really aren't fact-finding hearings. Those are embarrassment hearings. Mm-hmm. And I think – and I've been part of those, to tell you the truth, where I'm called in to represent the agency, right? And then there's a bunch of other people who really weren't there, mm-hmm. you know, but yet they have an opinion, and there is their right to have the opinion. You know, for something like this, though, where the ramifications of not just to GSA, but the scrutiny because it's an election year and because of scrutiny now that's going to go to every agency because mm-hmm. there were some bad actors, basically. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. And I'm hopeful that, you know, the hearings, you know, are going to be fact-finding and not sort of more on the political side of mm-hmm. making statements about big wasteful government. And so my hope is that, you know, that's the experience that she has, because I think it's important right now that we have those kind of hearings. And they can go either way, quite frankly.
Ruben, as a journalist covering this, April 19th comes around. What are you going to be looking for as you watch this hearing and listen to the back and forth between the members of the committee, both sides of the aisle, and Ms. Johnson?
Well, I'm going to be looking for, you know, what is the tone of this hearing? Like Molly was suggesting, you know, is it just to make a point, or are they really trying to get to the bottom of this to see how this happened and what actions were taken to prevent this from happening? Martha Johnson, in her letter of resignation, said, you know, she kind of outlined some of the things she did when she found out about this. Mm-hmm. And then she said, but clearly that wasn't enough.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to see how this unfolds during those hearings.
And she'll be asked those questions. She'll be asked, when did you find out? You know, and she'll, those are the kinds of things that she's going to be prepared for.
Mm-hmm. A terrific Federal News Countdown, both of you this week. Thank you very much for being here. The most important federal news story of the week, as selected by both Molly O'Neill and Ruben Gomez, the dealing with the General Services Administration scandal. All the stories on the countdown posted at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The audio will be there later this afternoon, too, so you can listen anytime you want. Thank you, Ruben Gomez. Thank you, Molly O'Neill. Great
Thank
to see you both of you. And hour number two of In-Depth with Francis Rose is coming next.